X-15, number 1B.
Now this is, as you may feel, an indication of what we have been showing yesterday, namely that those four levels are four different things, yet they are the same thing. They don't exclude each other, they are not in watertight compartments, that those four levels are always one. But according to the standpoint of consciousness or to the standpoint of observation or standpoint of contemplation I take, I find there different laws. So that discussion which usually goes on among Christian Science, that they always argue and say, no, this is so, no, this is so, usually can be very easily resolved by saying, yes, you are right, and you are right, because you look from this standpoint and you look from that standpoint. They don't exclude each other. All what you have to see is the standpoints, the categories from which you look at it. And then you can have one universe. Now, let's see the same parallel in the development of the Christian Science thought. See, at the beginning, the general thought in Christian Science was moving on that level of thinking. What shall I think? We were saying of somebody else, oh, she is a very nice thought. Or we were saying of somebody, he or she has a very powerful thought. Well, these are indications which show that at the beginning, Christian Science was just taken from the thought level, from the thinking right, to some positive thinking. Then came a time with Kimball, where he tried to show that it hasn't to do so much with thinking, but that it has to do with idea. That mind is expressed through its idea, and that all that matters are ideas. And so, again, a higher level was reached for still Christian Science. Then the thought advanced, and John Dolly came along and said, yes, we can define these ideas, and the moment we have defined these ideas correlate and form a divine system. And he was investigating what Mrs. Eddy meant when she said that divine metaphysics is reduced to a system. And so he began to see that these ideas can be classified. A system means that one can classify ideas. And he classified these ideas as days of creation, as numerals of infinity, as the ideas of the seven synonymous terms, as the ideas of work, Christ, Christianity, and science. He began to classify them. Once they were classified, thought did rise further and said, but they are not static. They are not just put somewhere into categories. These categories are only a help for us to understand it. These ideas operate in an infinite calculus. And so we were considering how these ideas combine with each other, how every idea can combine with each other idea, and in practice we could just go and combine the right idea with every other right idea in order to get the full concept of an idea. And so we had a sense of the calculus of idea. Well, at that time we woke up and said, oh, how wonderful. If man is the idea, then man is a calculus of idea. And I remember that's only a few years ago how we were happy with it when we coined that, where we saw that apparently Jesus in one of these fragments which are left called Ye Are the City of God, see, ye are the calculus, ye are the foresighted city of God, and we just rejoiced in seeing, golly, man as idea is a calculus of idea. Not just idea, not only a system of idea, but a calculus of idea, you see. Well, that was a wonderful stage, but it wasn't yet quite the end of it. Then we began to see that Mrs. Eddy speaks of system not only in the singular, but in the plural, mind and mind systems, the systems of idea, that there are many systems. And so we began to see, oh yes, therefore we must see that these systems are on various levels on top of each other, and we began to realize, oh yes, there is a system on the level of Christian Science and one of the level of absolute Christian Science, and so we got the height of the Holy City. And therefore it was no more so much a system than a structure, a whole structure, a whole cube. And we began to see the structure then in the Bible and in the textbook, the structure of the Bible, how the Bible is not just one book put next to the other one, but that they all form systems, usually a 16-fold systems on top of each other. Say you take the 16 prophets, and then you say take the 16 epistles and so on, and we begin to see that man is not only a calculus of idea, he's all a whole structure of ideas with various levels and heights and forms, where everything has its place in it. And so, having everything in it, then came the point around about 3 years ago where we began to see, but that structure is a oneness. And we get to see the signs of oneness in the textbook. That each chapter in the textbook is depicting oneness in a different way. That there are 16 different beliefs of dualism, you see, which can be met with 16 ideas of oneness. And when was it? In Princeton, three years ago, we brought forth that idea that structure is of oneness. And then we felt, now we have it. Naturally, we never got it. Revelation goes on, you see. And suddenly, we began to realize, lately, that this oneness, which is an infinite structure, with a lot of categories, vertical, horizontal, the breadth and length and height, that this whole structure moves. That this oneness moves by itself. That, in other words, that it has within itself a self-operative principle which is self-organizing, which is self-regulating, which is doing everything by itself in operation. Now that's the idea of cybernetics. Cybernetics is that which tells us that there is a self-operating system. And this is only the beginning of defining cybernetics, but as far as I got it now, you see. So that what you felt, I think, the last 2 days, that you felt the burden was lifted off your shoulders, to have to do something, but to let it happen, is really the cybernetic idea of self-organizing systems. Of self-operating systems. Not of an operating system, of a self-operating system. Where we don't have to operate something, but that being is apparently of that nature that it is self-regulating, self-operating, self-ruling, and as we will see, self-excluding error, self-correcting error, self-watching and preventing oneself from error. Everything is of that sort. But that's going too fast now. Ah. Yes. Well, now we got it as far as that, you see. What I want to show is this development through various stages in the Christian Science movement. Just as physics has developed through various stages and layers of material universe, from the microcosm, macrocosm, megacosm, and in each cosm there are different laws. Just as we have different laws, the moment we regard being, either from the level of thinking, then we have positive thinking. We can go to Mr. Peel instead of to the Christian Science Church, you see. Positive thinking. Then we can go to idea. There are different laws ruling the ideas. Then we can see, we can go further from idea to the system of idea, then to the calculus of idea, then to the structure of idea, and always more laws, wider laws come in, and then to the oneness of being, and now we really can see the content of the oneness of being as a self-operating cybernetic idea, which has again its own laws. And they are terrific, these laws. And they are all in the textbook. You may say, yeah, Mrs. X didn't say so. No, she did. Why should she say if that term was not coined? Why should it say that when the world was not ready for it? She had to reduce it to her age, and she says so. Just as she had the guts to take the Bible and say, I'm presenting the Bible in a completely new terminology, namely the terminology of the textbook, and no more in the terminology of the Bible. So we must have the courage to take the same principle of the textbook and present it in the terminology of today and in the symbolism of today. And the symbolism of today naturally is something very different. And we must have the courage to do that. That doesn't do anything to minimize Mrs. Eddy's discovery. On the contrary, just as Mrs. Eddy, when she had that discovery from God, not from the Bible, from God, she could see that in the Bible her discovery was adumbrated. Is that the right term, adumbrated? That it was already there in a nucleus, in a little sense, you see. That it was already indicated there. And so today the same thing happens to us, that we can say, if we look at the textbook today properly, we can see that the whole cybernetic idea was already there. It wasn't coined that way, it wasn't explicitly presented that way, but that doesn't matter. The world had first to become ready for it. But when it is ready, let's have it and not resist it, and be those old churches that tried to put out the university out of the churches. Well, another 10 minutes. All right, let's go to the term cybernetics. Cybernetics comes from a Greek word, from cybernetes. The cybernetes is the helmsman, the steering man, the man who did steer the ship. The helmsman, is that right? Did you get it? And on another occasion, they didn't quite get it, and I thought I said the helmsman. Well, so quite the same. I also like to show now that it is the human being. Yes, well, the steerman, the helmsman on the ship was called the cybernetist. And it is from that term that cybernetics has taken the terminology. It's therefore that which steers towards desired goal, towards a prefixed against a telephonistic goal. Now, this is only the term, but cybernetics, every cybernetics, is based on four factors. And you see, those who have to do with computers and so on, they usually don't know the science of cybernetics. They just know the technical application of computers and so on. But what we have to know is the ground of cybernetics. And cybernetics is based on four factors, which can be symbolized through that Helms men, namely through shipping. They have taken that because in shipping, in seafaring, you have four factors at work in order to achieve it. The first is one has a captain who knows where he is and who says to where he wants to go. He is in Boston and he says, I have to go to Gibraltar. All right. That's the captain. He sets the plane. And then he calls the navigator and says to him, here, old boy, this is what I want to do. Now you look how you get there. And I go and have a good meal, and afterwards I go to sleep. That's your job now. And so the navigator takes the chart and so on and begins to calculate how he can go from Boston to Gibraltar. How far it is and which way he has to go and so on. Takes in the weather and the tide and everything and calculates how to go. He programs that plane. He's the programmer. When he has done that, they go off from Boston and the navigator calls the helmsman and tells him, now here is my program and you stick to it. Every minute, every hour, you check on it and see that every step of it is really executed the way I have said. And so the helmsman stands there day and night and steers according to his plan, looks at the plan, says, now, after 2 hours, I have to go a bit to another direction and so on. But that boat wouldn't run without the fourth factor, namely, without the rudder, without the engine, without the power. There must be power in it. If you have these four, well, you can make your journey. So these are the four fundamental factors in cybernetics. You may perhaps have wondered why on earth I haven't given a definition of cybernetics up to now, but given the factors, the elements of it. I'll tell you why. I just read recently a new book that has come out with the title, Nobody Knows What Cybernetics Is. And he talks the whole book through about cybernetics and says, nobody knows what cybernetics is. He said, it's at the moment completely impossible to define cybernetics. Because it's such an intricate subject that one is not easy to reduce cybernetics to one single definition. Naturally, it gives a lot of definition, shows why they are good, why they are missing something, and so on. But perhaps for the present moment, for our purpose at the present moment, and we see that we can enlarge on it, we can therefore say cybernetics is the art of steering actions for the purpose of attaining a desired goal. It's the art of steering, it's the art of how to do things, how to operate, in order to achieve the desired goal, whatever that goal is. And so you feel at once that cybernetics is something very dynamic, that it is that which applies practically to everything. Not practically to everything, we will see that it applies to everything under the sun and above the sun, because everything is moving, and therefore everything must be steered and guided, and that there is a plane, and that that plane must be achieved and obtained. But in order to attain it, there must be a government of it, and cybernetics shows the self-government of it. Now, let's go back again to the symbolism of the captain and the navigator and the helmsman and the rudder. Now they go off and are in the middle of the Atlantic, and there breaks out a storm, and the boat is drifted away. Now the navigator couldn't know that in advance, that there will be a storm after 2 or 3 days, and how strong that storm will be, and in which direction that storm will go, and therefore in which direction that boat is taken out of its course. We call this an interference factor that comes suddenly up, which has not been calculated into it right from the beginning. So what happens as a symbolism? What happens? The helmsman notices that he gets out of the way, and so he had to inform backward the navigator and say, "You navigator, come and help me. I got out of my way, you have to give me a new program, how to get to Gibraltar." And so the navigator has to take back the new information, where he is, how strong the storm is, and so on, and has to calculate it new in order to proceed. So, can you see that in a cybernetic system, there is a so-called first a feed-in? The navigator feeds in the program and says to the steersman, "You go this way." Then comes the interference factor, and there is a feedback of information. You have the feedback in cybernetics, where you feed back information to the beginning and say, you must plan anew from a new beginning in order to come to the very same point. So this is called a feedback, which gives us a sense of a circuit going on, you see. From the navigator to the steerman, from the steerman back to the navigator, perhaps even to the captain sometimes, which says, "We can't go to Gibraltar, it's impossible. The war has broken out there, and what shall we do?" And feeds back even to the captain, and he has to make a new arrangement. And this is called a circuit. And this circuit is going on its own, by information. So I just want to introduce now the term circuit or self-regulation within its system. That's one of the main factors in cybernetics, that it is therefore not only what I gave as a definition, the act of steering to attain a certain purpose, but it also includes within itself a self-regulating factor, a built-in self-regulator, which goes on. Now, as we proceed, you will see that clearer and clearer. So, And you see, and another point, you see, which is interesting in it. Why is this feedback from when an interference comes in? Because an interference is a disruption of the harmonious process of harmony. And therefore, that interference factor must be counteracted through new programming in order to get the game back into balance. It's equilibrium. A cybernetic system is always acting such that it remains in equilibrium, in harmony. And the moment an interference factor comes, either the cybernetics prevents it coming in, forewarns it, says, stop, there comes an interference factor, and tries to eliminate it, or when it comes in, if it is too strong and can interfere, it has within itself the intelligence or the information how to correct it. Can you already hear what that has to do with Christian Science?
Yeah.
See, that we like harmony. We like to be in that state of equilibrium where our plane of life is just unfolding, unfolding harmoniously. And we have the preventive art of Christian Science, which says, I know how to prevent an interference factor from coming in and having its effect. That's absolute Christian Science, which is the preventive art of Christian Science. But when it has come in and we become sick and things go all wrong, we have the correcting information within ourselves to bring back the situation to normal. Then it is on the level of Christian Science. Can you somehow just feel with your fingertips, so to say, what cybernetics is, you see? So I first showed you the four factors of cybernetics, which is the captain, the navigator, or the programmer, then the helmsman, who does what has been programmed, and then fourth, the power which brings us there. In cybernetics, that power naturally is intelligence. The greatest power is intelligence, is science. Now, within that, we have a self-regulating circuit built in, which is there in order either to prevent an interference factor from manifesting itself, or if it has manifested itself, to be able to correct it in order to come back to normal, which we call healing, establishing again the normality of mortal mind, as Mrs. Eddy calls it, the normality of the body, and bring it back to harmony or health. Now, let us see, what are those four factors in science, in Christian Science? If you know the word Christ, Christianity, and science, you at once have heard that these four factors are just those four sides of the Holy City. The word is always that which sets the goal. You see, it's the captain. The Christ is always that which programs out. The Christ is that which comes in and says, all right, I program this, I'm doing this and that. It's the navigator. Then comes always Christianity, the helmsman, which says, and I have to obey that Christ step by step by step by step, or I get out of prison. So Christianity is the application, the using of that program, of what the navigator has said, you see, using it. And then fourth, you have science, the power of intelligence, the omniscience of science. So, in these four, you see, we have the Word, Christ, Christianity, and science depicted. So already you can see the elements of divine cybernetics, namely that it is built on word, Christ, Christianity, and science.